Friday, October 22nd.
I'm Pete Tucker, filling in for Askia Muhammad. Here are today's local headlines. The Washington Post company owns the for-profit college and test company Kaplan, which earned a 2009 revenue of $2.6 billion, accounting for more than 60% of the Post company's total revenue. For-profit colleges have come under federal investigation recently for allegedly encouraging students to take on more debt than they are able to handle. In an article published in today's Washington Post, reporter Nick Anderson reveals a number of startling facts. From the article, quote, "Companies that run colleges and trade schools for profit are mounting a full-tilt, high-dollar campaign against an Obama administration effort to tighten rules for their access to federal aid. The industry has staged a Capitol Hill rally, run advertisements in national newspapers, hired big-name lobbyists, and coordinated thousands of comments on the proposed regulation in an effort to derail or dilute it. This month, industry executives are beginning a round of private meetings with senior education department officials to argue their case. At stake is a lucrative source of funding for a sector of higher education that serves about one of every 10 post-secondary students and has more than doubled its market share in the past decade. Stocks of for-profit colleges have fallen sharply in recent months amid warning about how the proposed rules could shake up the schools. For-profit schools receive about one of every $4 spent on federal Pell Grants for students in financial need. That totaled more than $7 billion in the last school year, up from nearly $1 billion a decade earlier. The Washington Post Company operates for-profit schools through its subsidiary, Kaplan, and owns more than 8% of stock in Corinthian Colleges, another for-profit company based in Santa Ana, California. Continuing to quote from the Washington Post, Corinthian, with about 110,000 students, hired former House Democratic leader Richard Gephardt as a lobbyist. The Post Company, with about 112,000 students, retained Steve Elmendorf, a former Gephardt aide, as a lobbyist, and Anita Dunn, a former communications director in the Obama White House, as an advisor. Records analyzed by the Center for Responsive Politics show the industry spent more than $3 million from January through September on lobbying. Corinthian spent $570,000, the records show, and the Post Company $420,000. Donald Graham, chairman and chief executive of the Post Company, is pressing his views personally with lawmakers and the administration. A federal official said this week that Graham is expected to meet soon with Education Secretary Arne Duncan. Graham said, out of completely good intentions, the administration has come up with a regulation that will have very bad consequences. Graham, who called the issue of vital importance to a key part of the company, said it's the first time he has lobbied directly on any federal matter in a dozen years. Alan Asserson is an education activist who has been closely following the Washington Post coverage of and business dealings in education.
The altruistic motives of the Washington Post in protecting the poor and people who need educational opportunities to extend their professional opportunities is very admirable. However, I don't believe that their profit motives are being superseded by those altruistic motives. It's surprising that Kaplan and many of these other for-profit educational organizations who are under investigations for many under federal and state violations of deceptive advertising and that have been selling educational opportunities like the for-prime, you know, below-prime mortgage industry are now claiming that they are the most important defenders for the educational opportunities for the less fortunate. What I find even more troubling is the fact that there are people in the financial industry itself, specifically Stephen Eisman, who worked on Wall Street and specifically profited from directing his investors into financial instruments, which took advantage of the collapse of the mortgage industry and knows it very well, said that there was only one industry that he thought that was comparable to that, and that was the for-profit private education industry in the United States. There are people getting loans for people for for educational endeavors that have no reasonable chance for them to recover or be able to repay loans based on the income they could expect to receive. And the deceptive practices that are being used in the for-profit marketing, the marketing of for-profit educational institutions are very much like those that you see for a lot of these discount mortgages that are being that were being sold by companies like LendingTree and the like that are also of similar ilk. So I would hope that people recognize the similarities and that the federal government needs to protect our interests, not so much from that they're financing this directly, but they're actually indemnifying through these federal loans these for-profit institutions who are routinely operating under a practice where they have a percentage which they're allowed, which they are always going right up into but not crossing until so that they avoid the greater scrutiny that they would if they had go beyond certain thresholds.
That was education activist Alan Asserson. Last night, hundreds of people gathered at Matthews Memorial Baptist Church for the Ward 8 Town Hall, which was part of D.C. Council Chairman and presumptive mayor-elect Vincent Gray's listening tour. Linda Miller, resident counsel for Berry Farms and chair for the new community, was one of those in attendance.
I came to the meeting today of the town meeting with Vincent Gray, who's coming in to be, I hope, our future mayor. I was very happy to have this meeting and get my question in because a lot of our residents and Berry Farm is asking about what's happening to our historical site of Berry Farms. And I'm glad we had this meeting up here at Matthews Church because I have meetings also here and at the rec center with the residents of Berry Farms. I hope that we will succeed in writing of getting the truth that we have the right to come back and it will be affordable housing because we know that a lot of things are coming around us here in Ward 8 because as we look across that bridge, we see a lot of things being built as condominiums, high-priced places, and a lot of buildings. And we're just hoping that it be recognized that we need affordable housing for our people in Ward 8 and also 7.
That was Linda Miller, resident counsel for Berry Farms. Also attending last night's Ward 8 town hall was John Briscoe, who is concerned about the city's deficit, at least $175 million, as well as the significant payouts being given to top officials. Briscoe pointed to Fire Chief Dennis Rubin and Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Despite being only 43, if Lanier were to leave her position, she is scheduled to receive a pension of more than 70% of her base salary, which began at $175,000 3 years ago. John Briscoe raised this issue directly following last night's Ward 8 town hall.
My concern for tonight was the reported $175 million budget deficit that we're facing that's reported, which is probably more than that. However, Councilmember Mendelson is pushing forth this emergency legislation to provide these golden parachutes for the assistance of Fire Chief Dennis Rubin and the Police Chief Kathleen Lanier. And these members accept these positions knowing full well they served at the pleasure of the mayor. If they were not eligible to retire, they should not accept these positions. So why should we as the citizens of the District of Columbia be forced to fund their salaries or their retirement? He's pushing forth saying that they should be entitled to 80% of their retirement at their current salary, even though they're not eligible for retirement.
That was John Briscoe speaking just outside Matthews Memorial Baptist Church following last night's Ward 8 town hall. October 11th at Vincent Gray's Ward 5 town hall at Community Academy Public Charter School, two Hardy Middle School students spoke up. Directly following her schoolmate, Asia, 13-year-old Miranda Woods addressed the crowd and Gray.
My name is Miranda Woods, and I go to the same school as Asia Hardy Middle School. And every day I travel from in this neighborhood all the way up into Georgetown, where Hardy Middle School is, to get a good education. And last year, Michelle Reed said that our very effective principal, Mr. Pope, was going to leave. And he is gone this year, and we now have four people in the place of his one place that cannot do the job correctly. Our school with him made AYP for 10 years or something like that straight. And now with these people, on the first day of school, everyone was handed a schedule they said was built off their grades and everything from the past year, which I know is not correct, because for 4 weeks I was stuck with a schedule where I took French last year and they had me in Spanish. I took pre-algebra last year, they had me in that same class again. My brother took beginning band, they had him in beginning band again. I talked to a boy yesterday who still doesn't have a second period class. His schedule is still messed up. There are kids that are getting new schedules every day. And so they're coming into these classes and they've missed 6 weeks of school now, and they don't know anything about these classes. They've missed all that work. And these principals, they have meaningless things to do. A head principal is not even there every day. She's in charge of two other schools.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gray.
That was Hardy Middle School student Miranda Woods. And coming up later in the program, we'll speak with Miranda and Brother Malachi, who will be joining in the studio to discuss the situation at Hardy Middle School and their ongoing organizing efforts. Today, the Washington Post made its endorsements for the D.C. Council. In Ward 3, the Post endorsed the Republican, Dave Hedgepeth, over the incumbent, Democrat Mary Che. City Paper's Loose Lips had this to say of the Post's Ward 3 endorsement, quote, "It's payback time, Mary Che. The Washington Post editorial board has not forgotten Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che's endorsement of Vince Gray over the paper's preferred choice, Adrian Fenty. And today, the paper avenges that wrong by endorsing Che's opponent in the upcoming general election, Republican Dave Hedgepeth." In Ward 5, the Post endorsed another Republican, Tim Day, over the incumbent Harry Thomas Jr. The Post editorial endorsing Day reads, quote, "Mr. Thomas has stood in the way of school reform, catered unduly to the unions, and made a mockery of council oversight," end quote. It is worth noting that Fenty and Reese school reform has left the entire Ward 5, which Mr. Thomas represents, without a single public middle school. For the non-Democratic at-large council seat, the Post gave its enthusiastic endorsement to David Catania and said that he faced, quote, "token opposition from statehood Green candidate David Schwartzman and Richard Urban, an independent." David Schwartzman received more than 18,000 votes in the November 2008 general election, beating two Democrats turned independents who greatly outspent him. Responding to the Post's endorsement of his opponent, Republican turned independent David Catania, Schwartzman said, quote, "I'm proud that I'm not being endorsed by the Washington Post, given their long-standing support for the Fenty-Ree-Catania team, who have served to protect the interests of the very wealthy in the big corporate sector at the expense of the low-income, working, and middle-class majority," end quote. Jonathan O'Connell reports in the Washington Post that a $950 million project is moving forward on the grounds of the old convention center. Construction is scheduled to begin as soon as April on six new buildings that will make up one of the largest active developments on the East Coast. Neither the developer nor the city would name the investor behind the deal, saying only that it is a foreign entity and willing to foot almost the entire bill. This development is taking place in Ward 2, which is represented by Councilmember Jack Evans, chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee. And those are some of the local headlines. This is Spectrum Today here on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica Radio. I'm Pete Tucker. We now turn our attention to public schools right here in the District of Columbia, and one school in particular. I'm joined in the studio by two Hardy Middle School students, Malachi and Miranda Woods. This brother-sister team has organized with their fellow students to fight back against the changes that Hardy has undergone since the former principal, Patrick Pope, was promoted to by outgoing school's chancellor, Michelle Rhee, to a school that does not exist. Malachi and Miranda's organizing has included an attempted sit-in strike on September 15th, the day after D.C. Council Chairman Vincent Gray defeated Mayor Adrian Fenty in the Democratic primary. At the very time the strike was called for, a surprise fire drill forced the entire school to evacuate the building. Welcome, Malachi and Miranda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Let's start for people who don't know where Hardy Middle School is and what it's like. Can you describe it? Go ahead, Miranda.
Well, Hardy Middle School is in Georgetown. It's in Georgetown, and it's made up of predominantly African-American kids from all over the city. And it was newly renovated, and there weren't a lot of Georgetown families going there. And so this past year, Georgetown families now wanted, they're saying they want their school back and they want to send their children there, but they're not agreeing with the makeup of the children there, with all the African-American kids there. And so they were upset with that, and they didn't like the principal. And so the principal was fired or taken away from our school by Michelle Rhee. And while nothing has happened right now about all the makeup of the kids in the school, they're saying that something will happen in the future.
Malachi, who is the principal right now?
Her name is Miss Nirenberg. She is operating two schools now, including Hardy. She was operating just Hyde Addison, but now she's operating Hyde Addison and Hardy's.
And who was the principal?
Mr. Pope.
Patrick Pope. Can you describe him?
He was a very effective principal. He was friendly. He knew your personality, and he was a real nice guy.
Why is he not the principal of Hardy Middle School now?
It's mostly because the Georgetown families in the Georgetown area spoke to Michelle Rhee and were asking her to remove Mr. Pope so they could have a principal that would listen to the families more than the parents, more than the school children, I think. And so Michelle Rhee just grabbed one of the principals and put her in Hardy.
And she's now principal of two schools.
Yes.
And Patrick Pope, he is principal of a school that doesn't exist?
Well, right now he's supposed to be planning a new magnet school that would be in Georgetown that there is no money for. And if you really look at what I've been hearing about what this new magnet school is supposed to be made of, it's really just like Hardy. It's going to have an arts and music program and be just like Hardy. And one of our arguments at the beginning of last year was, why can't you just make our school a magnet school? I mean, that'd save a lot of money, and we could keep our principal. But they still removed him.
Malachi, you're in 7th grade.
Correct.
Miranda, you're 8th grade. And yet, you guys have been speaking out and organizing. What makes you do it?
We feel that it's unfair treatment that Michelle Rhee has done. So we tried to fight back to see if we could get Mr. Pope back and maybe change the mind of Michelle Rhee or Mayor Fendi.
She's been very unfair to a lot of schools, and I don't agree with most of everything she does. And when it finally hit me hard, where it affected my school life, I was just totally fed up with it. And it was wrong for her to do this, and she just totally messed up a school that was working correctly. It doesn't make any sense.
It was working correctly. I've heard you previously, Miranda, talk about a reading period and some of the others that changed the schedule. Can you talk about some of those changes?
The head principal is Ms. Nirenberg, and she has three underneath her, three assistant principals. And because Ms. Nirenberg is running two different schools, when she's not there, the other principals are running it. So these principals put together a new schedule. Some say it's because they couldn't figure out our old schedule, which was some people made it seem similar to a college schedule where you didn't have every class every day. And we just have a regular schedule where we have each class every day for 42 minutes. And with all the stuff that we do at Hardy, it's not enough time for to do anything in the classes. You really just have enough time to do a warm-up, collect the homework, review the homework, and assign more. So you need more time in the classes. And the way Mr. Pope had it, you had more time. The classes were all over an hour, hour 30 minutes. And so they took that change. They changed that
And they also changed where last year we had this block of time that was sort of like a study hall where we could sit in our homerooms and we could be on the computers typing up reports or researching stuff for homework. We could go to another room and take a quiz that we missed or study with another teacher, and or we could just read or do other stuff for classes. And now we go to the auditorium and we have to sit, we can't even sit next to each other. We have to sit a seat between us and we're supposed to just read. But none of the kids, they are angry with the changes that have happened there, and a lot of them don't respect what's been happening at the school, and they don't respect the principals. So we go to literacy in the auditorium, and they'll sit there and they'll talk, or they won't read. And so they've been bringing in teachers, and all the students respect the teachers totally. So if the teachers come in, the kids will be quiet because they know if I know this teacher, they're not gonna take me disrespecting. So we have to do as we're told. So the changes that have been brought to the school have just brought chaos because teachers can't be everywhere at the same time. So that means whenever they're not around, the school is just in disarray.
What would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see Mr. Pope come back, and I'd like to see our old scheduling come back, and I like to see the teachers get a break. They have to teach almost every period of the day. They don't have much of a break, and now they've got them on like lunch duty or literacy or whatever, and it's not much time for them to do much of anything except like plan or something. They need a break, so I'd like to see that happen too.
Malachi, I met you and your sister Miranda on September 15th. September 14th was the Democratic primary, which D.C. Council Chairman Vincent Gray defeat Mary Adrienne Fenty. September 15th, Wednesday, you organized a protest, a sit-in protest. Can you talk about why you organized that?
We organized a protest for the reasons that Miranda had just said. One of them was that we had literacy in the auditorium instead of our homerooms. Like when we had Mr. Pope there, we had in our homerooms. And other reasons were they cut our lunch period short from 25 minutes and maybe even longer than that when Mr. Pope was there to 20 minutes, and sometimes they let us out earlier than that. So, and some kids come down there late and they just call tables up to go get their school lunch, and the lines can be very long, so whoever's last is staying there until the next period goes up to literacy or something because the lines are too long and they don't have enough time to eat.
And go ahead. You're going to continue or?
No.
So for the reasons you've laid out, you decided that, how did you choose a sit-down strike? And can you explain exactly what you were planning on doing?
We planned the sit-down strike to make it a peaceful protest. We weren't trying to make like a whole riot-type protest, but it was meant to be a silent protest that we sat in the auditorium and demanded the things that we needed changed. And
so you're gonna what? How are you gonna? So you're gonna meet up with fellow students, walk out of class, and sit in an auditorium?
Yes, we were passing out slips to tell other students to spread the word about it, so we can meet at the auditorium, head in, sit down, be quiet, and at one point or another, stand up and demand the changes that we wanted.
And how did it go?
Well, we didn't actually get to do it because somehow the principal got wind of it, and so Miss Nirenberg along with another teacher were standing outside the auditorium doors giving tallies, and in the middle of our six period classes Miss Nirenberg called a fire drill to evacuate everybody from the building. And I'm pretty sure it was meant for nobody to get into the auditorium.
It was a striking sight to see. I had heard that you might do a sit-down strike or something of the sort. And so I came to Hardy. I was outside. And all of a sudden, I saw the whole student body outside. And Miranda, when you spoke in, you mentioned there was a chant going on as students were leaving the building?
Yes. The eighth graders especially were very upset with the outcome of this sit-in that we were planning. And so a couple of the kids, when the fire bell rang and we were in the hallways going down the stairs outside, a couple of kids started a chant saying, "Hope for Pope, hope for Pope," in order just to get so people could hear us. Now, we didn't get to protest, but we still are getting trying to get our point across. We want Mr. Pope back. And so until we got outside, we just kept chanting it over and over again.
I have been, you know, listening and reading the Washington Post and so on, and it seems to be on education reform. It's a lot of adults talking about kids, not talking to teachers very often. You mentioned how teachers, they need to deserve a break, and not talking to parents very often, and certainly not talking to students. And you guys have asserted your voices as students in this discussion. I actually wanted to turn to a clip, Miranda. This is of the Ward 3 town hall. Earlier in the show, we played a clip from the Ward 5 town hall where you spoke out. And then following that, you went to the Ward 3 town hall. These are Vincent Gray's D.C. Council Chairman and presumptive mayor-elect is having a listening tour, and there's a couple wards left. And this was in Ward 3. You're speaking to Vincent Gray.
Education reform is not just for a certain group of people in the District of Columbia. It is for everybody. It should be for every one of our children. And that, I don't think it was ever intended to be that. I've never heard Mayor Finty or anybody else say that it was intended for a particular group of people. But we're going to make sure that people see themselves in education reform more than has been the case in the last several years, so that people feel a part of where we're going and not feel left out. We're going to take one more question, and that will be it for the evening.
Here we are.
Hello, Mr. Gray. I was at your Ward 5 town hall meeting.
Yeah, you got written Tuesday. Up in the paper too, didn't you?
Yes.
You got a lot of play. You're 13 years old, right?
Yes. And there I was talking about all the changes that were brought to our school, Hardy Middle School, from our new principals that no one wanted, and all these changes and schedule mess ups and everything that have brought the school into turmoil, and how the school is just getting worse and worse by day. So today I'd like to ask you, will you please help us with all these changes, to reverse these changes that have been brought to our school? My school was one of the best middle schools in the city. It made AYP for 10 years straight. We need someone to help us out. Otherwise, the school is going to be a disaster. And I would also like to invite you to my school, and I'd be your personal tour guide, so you can come and see. You can come and see the kid that doesn't have a second period, so he wanders the halls because he doesn't have a class to go to. You can come and see this one stairwell that the 3/4 of the school has to share. You can come and see the worthless period we have in before lunch class, where we're supposed to just sit in the auditorium and we're supposed to read, but it never happens. You can come and see our 15 to 20 minute lunch periods that we have now. You can come and see all this stuff that has been going on to our school. I'd like you to come and see it so you can find better ways to help us out, and we can get Hardy Middle School back to where it was before, with Mr. Pope being a great school.
I tell you one thing, somebody should feel good about this student learning in our schools, right? I will say what I said the other night, and that is, first of all, I've followed this situation with Hardy School now for almost a year. I have no idea why Patrick Pope was taken out of that school. It's a puzzle to me. He is arguably one of the most effective principals that we have. You're absolutely right about Hardy having met adequate yearly progress, AYP, for every year in the last 10 years. It is the only school in the District of Columbia to have done that. He supposedly is planning a school that I don't think has a prayer of seeing the light of day, because we just don't have the money to create another arts, oriented school. So I will come and visit. And I want to say what I said the other night, and that is I'm not going to try to become the principal of Hardy. I'm not going to try to become the chief academic officer. I'm not going to try to become the chancellor. But I am going to be one of the chief accountability officers in the District of Columbia, and that is when things get done, there needs to be reasons why.
Miranda, that was your exchange with Vincent Gray. Any follow-up comments that you have, and has he come and visited Hardy Middle School?
He has not come and visited yet. After that, I asked that question at the end of the town hall meeting. One of his events coordinators gave me his card and to try and get in touch with me so we could set up a date that he could come to the school. And I have emailed him, and he has not responded.
Malachi, what do you hope to tell, maybe other students are listening, or maybe other parents who have been so supportive like your parents have, who are in studio here with us, what do you hope to tell other students and parents, maybe teachers as well, who might be going through difficult situations, even though it's supposed to be the school reform, supposed to be making everything better all the time, but for people that are going through a difficult situation, that it may not be, their school may not be getting better. Do you have a message for them?
I don't really have a message, but I can tell you that there will be a new day when Vince Gray becomes mayor. So everything will be better, and
now he's appointed Kaye Henderson, at least the interim chancellor, and she was Michelle Rhee's top number two person. Even though when I met you guys September 15th, I was standing next to your mom's minivan, and it had gray, I can't remember the exact phrases, but it was, you know, a lot of gray signs on it. And a lot of the folks who put gray in do want a lot of change. But Miranda, you're telling me that you've offered the presumptive mayor-elect to come visit, but he has not yet taken you up on that offer.
Yes. I don't totally think that he's ignoring me on purpose. He has a lot on his plate right now. He's doing these town hall meetings, and he's got everything else going on because there's still the final election in November. And so I think that he's not ignoring me, but he's got so much on his plate that maybe he just didn't have the time right now to do it. I expect he seems like a very honest and trustworthy and a good character man. I expect he will show up one day to see our school.
Soon?
Yes.
Any final thoughts you want to share, either of you, in this last minute?
No.
I'd just like to say that even right now, like, there might be other schools going through similar things, or other students that feel the same way as we do, or they just feel like there's been an injustice to them. I just want to say that just keep holding on. Protest in a peaceful manner. Get the word out about what's going on in your school. If a lot of people do this, then it can put a big impact on the city. There is strength in numbers. If you continue, or if you start to do the kind of things that we've been trying to plan to do, or that we tried to plan before, then you can be heard and things can change.
Those are the words of Miranda Woods, along with her brother Malachi, here on Spectrum Today, WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Pete Tucker, filling in for Askia Muhammad. Next up is Nightwolf. Stay tuned.